Greetings, fellow investigators, and welcome back to our video podcast, Into the Darkness, where my friends and I play the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. I'm your host, Tom Rayleigh. Our scenario is entitled Mirror, Mirror. It was written by Dean Shamshak, and is taken from the Unspeakable Oath magazine, issue number 13. Our game master is Thomas McKeon, and this is episode 3. I will be doing the recap as my character, Clifton Hawk. That being said, the players are ready. Let's begin our journey into the darkness. July 5th, 1930. Last night, the evening silence was broken by the occasional pop of fireworks celebrating our nation's independence. This morning, it's the sound of four men bellowing in terror at something they can't explain, something they have seen in a mirror. The screams echo through the house and call the attention of everyone, the men upstairs sleeping and the maids in the basement. I realize that part of that bellowing sound is coming from my own throat. I seem for a moment detached. It's the same nightmare landscape I've seen before. But as quickly as it unnerved us, we regain our composure, all except for Tommy, who has never experienced the supernatural before. After trying to explain it all to our host, I ask some questions. Seems Mr. Radley has only lived in the house for a short time. He's purchased the manor from an auction house in Salem. Witch-haunted Salem. Why is it that Salem and the supernatural always seem to walk hand in hand? While we waited for breakfast, Trent and I went to look at the fucking mirrors. Tommy came along. He was pretty rattled. I answered his questions about Caleb as best I could and tried to reassure him. But the mirrors just seemed normal. Shit. Fowler went to have another look at the Baldwin room, but came back with nothing. He planned on searching public records later in the day. He wanted to look for architectural blueprints or something to that effect. Thompson headed towards the library study, and amazingly, he found books, many still in boxes, labeled from the same auction house. Now, I didn't think of it until now, but I have to ask the question, who buys books in boxes from an auction? Not a collector. The only reason I can think of is if you intend to just decorate with them. Is that suspicious? Thompson said he thought Radley was an architect. After breakfast, we discussed the situation as we understood it with Radley and Bamboni. We spoke about this Carmichael fellow and the play that he'd produced. It's still playing. I think I should see it tonight. It's possible that Carmichael is somehow involved. Later, I went to explore the house myself, with a mind to identify something suspicious. And aside from one odd moment, nothing really seemed that unusual. But the strange thing that did occur was an odd moment of silence. I stood looking out the window towards the forest, and suddenly I realized that there were no bird sounds, none whatsoever. In summer, I strained and I heard nothing. After breakfast, Trent and Thompson went to the basement. They wanted to talk to the maids and have them show them where they heard the voices. They described the voices as masculine and indistinct. Not sure if they're going to find anything there, but it'll be interesting to see what they think. The great Bamboni wanted to explore Baldwin's room. He was sure, as a magician, that he could uncover how Baldwin left the room. I've seen his work. If there is a trick, he will find it, unless he's part of it. He claims that there is no way that anyone could have left that room. So I finally took a big risk and told him about the events concerning the Crimson Letters. We discussed the stone finger with that damnable fingerprint. I basically tried to make him see that the only way out of the room was not natural. I suspected the mirrors, that Something had come through the mirrors and taken Baldwin. And with a strange look in his eye, he showed us what looked like monster claw marks in the broken sideboard of the bed frame. This isn't going to end well.
All right. So you guys have been standing in what was Baldwin's room talking. The people that are in this room currently are Hawk, Trent, Dr. Thompson, and Felix. Hawk and Trent and Dr. Thompson have just informed Felix of everything that happened during the Crimson Letters campaign.
So that's why we're more inclined to accept a supernatural thing, especially since what we saw in the mirrors was very strange, unexplainable, except that we've seen it before. At least I have.
I really don't know what to say.
Well, now that you've shown us this freaking claw mark, and it's huge. How many fingers? Is it a five-fingered hand or a four-fingered hand or a three-fingered claw or
four?
Four. The hell? And do you suppose, you know, Felix, did you consider when you looked at the room that we're in, did you try the other rooms around it and, you know, use your feet to measure out to see if there was any discrepancy in the walls, that the walls were thicker in the middle than they should be?
I tried everything that I could think of. And these walls are solid. There's no hollow patches in the walls. I went round, I knocked on all of the walls to see if there were any hollow spots that might betray some sort of trap door or hidden passage or something.
I guess the final resting spot for that will be if Fowler manages to get the blueprints and bring them back with him, we can see if there's anything weird. Any hollow spaces.
It is at this point that you guys hear the billowing of a 1930s car as it comes down the gravel driveway and loops around to the front. This is probably them.
That must be Fowler now. Also, did any of you guys notice the strange absence of birds?
It's awfully quiet here for July, isn't it?
I mean, it's not all sound that's gone, but you can hear the sound of the wind, but no birds? A forest right next to us? That's freaking impossible.
Well, I've never been here.
Yeah, but it's just nature.
Yeah, but I mean, there's some plants and trees that don't encourage animals. I don't know.
It's a forest. The forest you find all through New England.
I don't know very much about it. I'm not a naturalist.
Damn it. Occult wise, there's always rumors that you know, crickets stop chirping and birds stop singing when something's there.
Are there any cats in the house or dogs or any pets of any kind?
No pets.
The mirror. Is the mirror on the side of the house facing the forest?
It's hanging on the wall that's facing the forest. So it's on the west wall. The glass, however, is facing east.
I'm not sure I understand. Is it facing so that it's reflecting the mirror, the forest?
So the reflective wall is facing the opposite way that the forest is.
Okay, I'm still not sure.
It's confusing. Forest is behind the mirror.
Yeah, the forest is behind the mirror.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. See, the forest is behind the mirror. we're still entertaining the idea that the mirror is somehow a doorway. I ain't touching it. No.
So you guys hear the front door open. Tommy and Fowler have entered into the foyer. And you can hear them kind of walking down the hallway.
I yell down, "We're upstairs in Baldwin's room."
Okay.
Okay, on my way.
So Fowler and Tommy. Tommy, are you heading upstairs too?
Yeah. Actually, you know what? I'm going to head to... Is it the basement you said where the kitchen was?
Yep.
I'm going to head down and see if I can get a drink of water, and then I'm going to head upstairs.
Okay. So Fowler comes into the room first. Fowler, you're standing with the rest of the group.
Yep. So were you able to get the blueprints?
Apparently there is no blueprints at City Hall.
Now that's strange. That's extremely strange. How old would you say this house is?
Did anyone pass an architecture skill? Well, actually, who has history?
Actually, you gave that to us already.
I did.
Yep. Building was built in 1610.
Okay. I think I had mentioned something that everybody in New England knows this style and this style and this style, depending on the... So that would be what, colonial or?
Yeah, first founding of Arkham.
Yeah.
Colonial style.
Yeah, there was no blueprint at all. I tried my best, but there's nothing.
See, that just seems really odd to me, because how could an auction house auction off a house without any blueprints? I mean,
I know. It is extremely weird.
Well, I've been mentioning that something that seemed really odd to me when Dr. Thompson said that there were boxes of books in the library. Now, I think that would make sense if I was moving into the house and I was bringing my boxes of books with me. But you said that the boxes of books were from the auction house. And that seemed really strange to me, unless you were just decorating with books and you had no reason to want the books at all.
Ooh. I don't know.
What I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if they were books that came from this house, then what the hell? You know, wouldn't they have just been here?
Yeah.
Why would they be auctioned separately?
And this is another weird thing is... He's been living in his house for how long? Like 4 or 5 months? There shouldn't be any boxes of still more books left.
Oh, I could understand that. If they were my books, I'd wait for a nice rainy day before I went into the library and decided to organize my whole frickin' library. Otherwise, they would just sit there and I'd think, geez, do I really want to go in there and open up the books? And he doesn't seem like a bookophile. You know, he doesn't seem like a bibliophile. He's not like... Otherwise, yes, if he was a book collector, if he collected rare books, he would very carefully put them all in order already.
Yeah.
Probably the books are just here for decoration.
Yeah.
Could the bookcases weird. Be for decoration? Maybe the bookcases are fake.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, well, Thompson, you know that the bookcases, they're solid oak, and they probably came with the house. They're old. Okay. They're as old as the rest of the house.
But maybe they have a secret door that, like in those future movies that you see all the time.
Yeah, like a switch or something like that.
Something that would move a bookcase.
The sun is starting to... It's now about 4:35, so the sun is starting to dip. So what would the group like to do?
Well, I think I'm going to go get tickets for that play. Does anybody want to come with me? I hear it's awful, but I'm curious to see what this Carmichael person is all about.
There's no way that I really want to sit through that play again, but
I understand.
Well, I'm also
But I know Carmichael. I mean, I know him in passing.
Oh, I mean, we're not really going
familiar
to
with him. Ourselves. You know, I'm not. I don't know him, but I know who he is.
You
obviously met him, so.
Well, I wouldn't say I've met him. I've in New York. I've seen him around. I mean, I don't know him as a person.
Bamboni, how long is roughly this place or this play? You've sat through it.
It's a normal play, so it's about 2.5 hours.
Yeah, it was about 4 weeks long, from what I remember.
2 or 3 acts.
Yeah, it lasted, you know, an eternity.
Now, do you know if it was 2 or 3 acts?
I would imagine it's probably a 3-act play.
It's a 3-act play.
Okay.
Ugh.
Well, I've been to a lot of plays.
Well, and, is there any way we can do that tomorrow? Do that to go to the play tomorrow, or is this like the final day?
Well, I have no idea, but I'm going to go tonight. I don't have anything else to do. I want to see the context of the play. It might have nothing at all to do with it, but this Carmichael, there's something that he might be involved because there's a financial connection between him and the disappeared man.
I don't want to go to the play.
All right.
Not tonight, at least.
Well, I'll tell you how it was. And then
it's probably horrible.
I'll go with you.
Oh,
two ears are better than one.
Good doctor.
Okay, so Hawk, Dr. Thompson, who else?
Can't say I'm anxious to go based on Mr. Felix's recommendations.
So, I am curious to see how terrible this play is. It can't be as horrible as Bodhi is saying.
Oh, it could be.
What about you, Trent? Are you heading out?
I think I'll go as well. Might as well.
Okay.
All right, so the three of us.
All right.
Maybe we'll have the chance to speak with Mr. Carmichael afterwards if he's present. He should be present, obviously.
What?
Well, look, I have no real desire to see the play, but I know Bergenstock. The owner of the theater might ease your way if you need to question anyone if I can help. I mean, I'd prefer to spend as much time as possible in the bar, if the truth be told.
Well, I'm sure we'll go there afterwards.
Maybe you could have a drink now, there, the great Bamboni or Grant Bambini, or whatever you want to call yourself.
Just Felix is fine.
You know, Fowler, show some respect. He is an accomplished magician, an accomplished stage performer. He is called the great Bamboni. Or if that, just call him Mr. Epstein.
Right.
Yeah, I learned my trade from the superlative Lee Kwai Kwat.
Care to show?
My dear old friend Harry Trubshaw.
Care to show?
So we've got 5 people all going to Sodom. Does that mean Corey is not going?
I guess I have to go then.
Let's just hope this place isn't burned down.
All right, so everyone is heading to Sodom. Well, Sodom is so. Here's what happens: it's about a 30-minute drive back into Arkham. So by that time, by the time you arrive, it's already around 5:30. The show starts at 6.
Okay.
So you guys drive down to the Arkham Theater.
Have we got our bits and pieces at the Radley House, or still in our lodgings?
What do you mean?
I believe that.
Well,
our stuff?
He offered to let you guys.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to go to the theater in a lounge suit. I mean, I'll get changed.
Yeah, I think we should get changed too.
Well, is it a hoop-de-doo theater, or is it? It sounds like a bar and basement theater.
Yeah, but I'm a performer. I've got an image to.
I understand. I'll tell you what.
You know, I mean, I'm.
I'll dress.
I will go in my professional garb, which is in my case white tie, and a very unique waistcoat.
Yeah,
I'll wear my clean trench coat.
just to kind of give background. The Arkham Theater House is kind of middle rung. The Angelica is middle. Everything else, the more expensive ones and the cheaper ones have all closed down, because no one can afford the expensive ones, and no one wants to perform for the cheap one.
I see.
So
the thing is, it's what they called Second Circuit, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's kind of housing everything from the sleazy kind of whatever stuff to the higher end, which Sodom is supposed to be the higher end.
Okay. An artsy burlesque.
Yeah. You can, lots of people just call it smut. But you guys sit, you guys walk into the theater and you see the poster for the play. It's just Sodom in big red letters. And then it says produced by Lee Baldwin, and then a bunch of other names. So you recognize Lee Baldwin's name up on the poster. You guys sit down, and boy, do you guys watch the worst play to ever be produced.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Oh, hi, Mark. Yeah. Tommy Wiseau just comes right out and he greets everyone. No, but it's fucking horrible. There's no real plot. It's just this person literally walking on stage, giving a whole bunch of exposition, walking off stage, people coming on and doing something perverse and disgusting. The guy who gave all the exposition coming out and saying, isn't this disgusting? Isn't this horrible? And then trying to do some pseudo intellectual, like make you think talk. And then he walks off and then it just repeats for 2.5 hours.
Hmm.
It's is there anything underlined in this play though? Something that might seem like the out of the ordinary besides it being so terrible?
No, I mean,
I'm looking for like a hidden message behind it. Maybe
did Carmichael write it?
Carmichael wrote it and directed it. He did pretty much everything. He casted it. He blocked it. He did everything.
Yeah,
this is his passion project.
I'm with Thompson.
He was a drinker, right? Perhaps he was drinking when he put this thing together.
Well, what you can tell is that there is a hidden message. But it's not so hidden. The message is that people are horrible and we deserve to be punished for the wrongdoings of humanity and blah 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 blah. But you can tell it's like this guy doesn't understand philosophy or morals enough to put this together to make sense. It's just shit.
That actually might make sense then. That might be our tie-in. Is this the kind of a person who makes moral judgments against people and then perhaps secretly wishes to do something about it? You know, kill the prostitute, murder the degenerate, the pervert, the drug user, whatever. Is that basically what it's saying?
A coherent play. I can't see him pulling off a murder.
A hatred play, a play of hatred about people who are... He sees himself as better than the rest of them.
Well, look, from what I know about Carmichael and from the gossip on the theatrical circuit, he's no upstanding moral citizen.
Okay, well, that makes that's okay.
If he's got an interest in the kind of subjects that are depicted in this play, then it's as a participant rather than a condemnation or moralist.
Well, let's see if we can meet the man. Perhaps we can have a drink with him and ask him what he means by this, without any kind of, you know, telling him any kind of that it was.
Well, I mean, just bear in mind, everyone I've ever spoken to about him has said that he's very unpredictable.
Okay. Yeah.
Which was reaffirmed by Radley the other night.
Yeah, I think he is kind of. I heard of him. I heard of him before. You know, from New York.
So the play's over.
Yeah.
I'm not going to clap that schmutter.
Huck, if you clap, you're the only one who claps. The actors hate the play so much and what's happened that they don't even do a final bow.
Okay.
The play just ends.
Just ends abruptly. Are we the only people in the theater?
There's about 7 other people, but you're the clearly only the only group.
I'm the only man who's ever seen this twice.
Was the no? The actors have seen it twice.
Roll sentence.
Was the audience reaction to it one of just dead icy silence, or did people get to giggling because it was so bad?
There was a couple people who were giggling. You know, they probably heard about the play pre-gamed, and then came kind of tipsy because he wanted to beat you over the head with this. There's no intermission. You sit there for 2.5 hours and watch this. Oh,
Jesus Christ! I gotta pee.
So you just sit there and watch this for 2.5 hours straight.
I bet the whole back alley is just covered in urine at this point.
I think I should have bought a whole carton of cigarettes with me.
Mr. Hawk, I think you owe me $3.50 for this.
Hey, yeah. I told you all. I told you all it was the worst play I'd ever seen. I warned you, but you wouldn't, but you had to see it for yourself.
No, I believed you, and it was. Your assessment of this play is
I should have just stayed back at the mansion. I would have had more fun there than...
Well, I don't want to overwhelm the man. If you would like to go back now, I'm going to try to go backstage and see if I can speak with Mr. Carmichael.
I'll go with you.
All right.
Well, I'd better come. I can probably get Bergenstock to let you backstage.
Well, he knows you, can... doesn't he? Yes.
I say, maybe
Bergenstock... smoking in the back. He's literally just standing by the door smoking a cigarette, waiting for everyone to leave so we can clean up.
Right. So you introduce us to Mr. Bergenstock?
Yes. Do I know? I don't know if I know Mr. Bergenstock or Andy.
probably call him Andy.
Hey, Andy. What's going
on? Felix. Hey, I didn't know you were here for 2 nights.
Oyster, you.
Hate yourself?
I'm not going to
do this accent anymore. It's hurting my throat, for goodness sakes.
He actually brought us along with him. We wanted to see for ourselves. I would greatly appreciate it if you would allow me to speak to Mr. Carmichael.
May I go back? He takes a big drag of his cigarette and then
I really like your shoes.
And he goes, "He ain't here."
Oh no? Do you know where he is?
He's at the Wilson Lounge. He's been there, I don't know, every single night this show has been going in Arkham.
All right, thank you. Those sandals are awesome.
Yeah, he wears sandals.
Yeah, Birkenstocks.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go to this place that he just mentioned.
All right. Okay, I'll see you later, Al, Andrew, Andy.
So you guys,
I don't know the guy's name. I've only known him a couple of days. What am I supposed to do?
So you guys head over to the Wilson Lounge, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
You guys are pay the cover.
I'm going. Is everybody else going?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I guess I'm going to follow you guys around.
We should pick up some lozenges for the Great Bamboni on the way.
Why is that guy following us?
It's about 9 o'clock at this point. You guys head over to the Wilson Lounge. You guys pay the nickel cover charge, and you head upstairs. It's kind of dead. You hear the radios playing some smooth jazz. But over in the corner, Dr. Thompson, you know that corner because that's exactly where Carmichael was sitting when he got up and started yelling at you. And you can see Carmichael, oily black hair. He would be a handsome guy if he, you know, kept himself up. Yeah, if he cleaned up a little bit. But you can see that he's wallowing in booze at this point. Bourbon is his drink of choice for tonight.
Before we actually get over there, I mean over close to the guy, I turn to the guys and say, Let's play this as if we found the play interesting.
But all right, we don't quite understand. Be aware this guy is a
unpredictable.
He's a proper mashugana. So just
let's sit at the table right next to his, and just sort of follow my lead. We'll see if this leads anywhere. So, as we go over to that table and we begin to sit down, I say, well, you know, it was an interesting play. I'm not sure I understood all of it, but it wasn't the worst thing I've seen. Maybe it has some merit in some ways. I wish that I could understand better what the author was trying to convey by the imagery. And I described some of the imagery in it to make it obvious we're talking about Sodom.
Yeah. You're talking, and he's just sitting there, just staring at his glass, like, foggy-eyed.
It's like, you know, some people are geniuses, and they get blamed because people don't quite understand their work. And it takes a while before people quite they understand it. I'd sure like to meet this Mr. Carmichael, who wrote it. I'd like to ask him a whole bunch of questions.
I thought some of the metaphysical imagery was particularly effective and interesting rhythmic devices, too.
Indeed.
Which seemed to counterpoint the...
The worst part is we're probably just encouraging to write more. And
So Carmichael, he hears this, and you can hear his chair kind of shift, and he gets up, and he's got the glass, and he says, "Are you talking about Sodom?"
"Oh yes. Have you seen it? It's playing at the Bum Bum Club, the theater,
the Angelica, theater. And he goes, "I wrote that," but then he looks at the group. And he sees Dr. Thompson.
You're Anthony Carmichael?
He glares at Dr. Thompson for a second, and he goes, "Yeah, are you with him?" And he points at Thompson.
Well, he's joined us, but we're all of different opinions about the play. I was just hoping to understand it better. Please have a seat. Have a drink with us. What is it that you were trying to say with the play?
He downs the bourbon. He puts the glass on the table and he says, "You buying?"
"Sure."
And he nods and he plops. He pulls a seat out from a table and he sits down, and he says, "People are fucking shit. They're horrible."
"Yes, I can see that." There's certainly an element of that in every place that you go.
Wow, they're fucking horrible everywhere, and that's what this is trying to say.
So you're trying to explain that everybody is that way, or you're trying to say that there are people like this, because they're all some good people.
Surely. Deep down, everyone is a sodomite. Self-centered, self-loathing. We're all fucking horrible. And he downs the drink again.
Do you mean that to counterpoint the surrealism of the underlying metaphor of the humanity of the author's compassionate soul?
Quasi-compassionate soul.
He looks at you, Felix, and he says, "You're the great Bambini."
Bamboni, but yes.
Bamboozled. Yeah.
Bamboozled might have been a more interesting name for you.
I am the great Black Betty Babylon.
You saw it twice. You were there the first night.
Yes, I just couldn't believe it. I had to go back and have another look.
And he nods, and then he points at Dr. Thompson, and he says, "And what were you doing there?"
I was enjoying this play. I do have to say it was quite interesting.
Yeah, what was your favorite part?
And I tell him about the, you know, the part where the hookers were on the street and doing their thing, and then he comes out. And
what did they call that? The Dirty Sanchez? That was really something interesting. Yeah,
I like the bit with the three llamas and the nun with the Viking helmet.
Now the Viking helmet
and the wet stick of celery.
Well, and the reason
I thought that was quite whimsical.
There was only the one horn on the Viking helmet.
When you say
still not entirely whimsical, sure what that cricket bat was for though.
When you say whimsical, Felix, he pounds his fist on the table and he says, "It wasn't supposed to be funny."
It was.
I didn't say funny. I said whimsical. I thought that the performance, but
supposed
not by
to make you itself. Think.
Yes,
well,
you exaggerated the point to make us think.
Performance by the artists on stage had an element of whimsy to it. I'm not saying that the piece itself was whimsical, but there was a whimsical motif in the flicking of the stick of celery by
the one point that I really didn't quite understand.
The nun with one leg.
The one point I really quite didn't understand, I thought maybe it had something to do with Freud, but when your lead character, what's his name, Malcolm? He suddenly stopped talking, looked at the audience and said, "I have to take a piss." And then he just walked off stage. And for what seemed like at least 5 minutes, we just stood there. Everybody stood there doing nothing. And then he came back and continued. I mean, that was just pure genius.
I thought that was very powerful. I was reminded strongly of Brecht.
I need you guys to... I need Tom and Mick to give me charm.
A bullshit roll.
I was really hoping you'd say fast talk, because I've got that.
42. What do I have? 42. What is it, charm, you said? Oh, no, I didn't charm him.
Oh!
The piss
bloody
part.
Hell, hang on. I've just got four. I made that.
Really?
Yeah, my charm is 15 and I rolled a four.
All right. I'll say that's a critical. But unfortunately, I need you both to pass.
Aww.
Because you're both bullshitting. So you can... Well, I'll give you it. Tom, high or low?
High.
Nope. All right. So He glares. And he says, "You're just joking."
No. No, I swear we're not.
And he's up, and he's pissed.
Oh, in the American sense. Sorry, I thought you just meant he was drunk.
Oh, no. He's
I'm confused.
He's pissed
now.
In the American sense. He's both pissed.
Both senses.
He's angry.
He's angry and drunk. So both senses apply.
Okay. Right. Okay.
And his face is as red as a tomato, and he just takes the glass of bourbon and he throws it on the table. And glass just shatters all over, and it hits you all, you know. And he starts screaming, "Do you know who I am?" And
you're
he just keeps screaming that. And he's
going
just jabbing.
To be paying several laundry bills.
As he's screaming, I'll just sort of look at him. I'll stare at him for a few minutes, and I'll say, "It looks like you might need another drink. Would you like another drink?"
And
then I have this little smile on my face. Would you like another drink, sir?
This fucking asshole.
Hey, he's the one who's throwing stuff around. My friends were complimenting his crappy play, and he's throwing glasses around.
Told you. He's
a short company.
He's a notorious schmuck.
I think we have an opportunity here, because he's drunk and he's angry, to shock him into confessing something. So I'm going to say... I can say, no, honestly, what we're really here for is to find out if you had anything whatsoever to do with the disappearance of Mr. Baldwin. And I'm hoping that in his anger, he'll just blurt something out. Can I, like, do a persuasion?
No, because he is angry. He is pissed. And he looks dumbfounded at you. His hair is like all over his face, and he goes, "What?" And he jabs his finger into your chest, Hawk. He like jabs in there, and he says, "Lee Baldwin was my main patron. He paid for everything. You accuse me?"
I'm merely asking the question, and I've got to grab his hand and twist it.
So waitress, excuse me.
Oh, the doctor's already upstairs.
Can I get a little club soda and a napkin, please?
The waitress has run out to get those things, but the bouncer is now like storming to approach because this is the second night in a row that he's caused an issue. Mm-hmm. So,
do you have any reason? Do you have any idea who might have wanted to get rid of Mr. Baldwin?
Fuck him! He deserved everything! And the bouncer grabs him and says, "All right, let's go outside." And at this point, Carmichael, he's screaming, "Whatever happened to him? Fuck him! Fuck him!" And they take him outside.
Well, it's more entertaining than anything she did on stage.
Well, I think that kind of gives us an idea of what we wanted to know, was if he's really involved in his drunken and angry state, although he says he doesn't care and that he was upset that he was one of the chief backers. He doesn't know what really happened to him. He didn't blurt anything out.
What did he mean, though, by the fact that he deserves everything he gets?
Well, maybe he thought that he wished that he was dead, but he says however he died or whatever happened to him.
But why? If he was his patron, his only patron.
He's probably pissed because he's not here. You know, disappearance doesn't mean dead. Disappearance means he's no longer funding.
Yeah, it means no more money.
He doesn't sound like he's murdered him. You know, I was hoping that he would blurt out something like, yeah, well, he deserved that knife in his back that I gave him. You know, something like that. Then we would go, aha!
Yeah, I mean, I was on the other side of that door. There was no one else in that room.
So, we're back to the supernatural.
Well, I mean, given what you've told me, I've been thinking about what you told me about your experiences so far. And I have to wonder whether Baldwin might just be a victim of circumstance.
Maybe he was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Could it just be where he was at the time rather than who he was? Maybe who he was is immaterial. Maybe he was just whoever happened to be in that room. Perhaps if things had gone another way and I had been the man in that room, then you'd be standing here with Baldwin now trying to find out what happened to me.
All right, let's assume that's the case. In that case, perhaps whatever it was that came into that room was looking for something. And Baldwin just happened to be there. Yeah, there's no reason for us to assume that the thing was looking for Baldwin. What do we know about Baldwin? Is there any reason why something would want Baldwin? Is he involved in the occult at all?
There is another thing. When you told me about you went into that office at the university,
mm-hmm.
and you found a body,
yes.
and then you looked in a mirror, and you saw this strange landscape,
yes.
in the mirror,
mm-hmm.
and then you said that after Baldwin's disappearance, several of you looked in a mirror here and saw strange things in that mirror.
There was.
Now, does that mean that the mirror itself is a portal, you say, or is this phenomenon with the mirrors perhaps the after effect of something else?
Are you saying that it's like a reverse vampire? Something that
well,
we can
I'm saying,
see.
No,
in
I'm
there.
Saying it's like a residual effect that after whatever has manifests, perhaps through mirrors, that perhaps there is this sort of residual something, this residual phenomena. You know, like after a storm, you can get static electricity.
There's one other thing.
I'm just trying
that
to look at it from a scientific perspective. I mean, I'm not a scientist, but I'm just trying to think this through. If this stuff exists, then there must be rules to it. It must.
There's something else that I haven't said. Something that I have blocked out of my mind. Something that I've tried very hard not to remember. It wasn't just a landscape that I saw. The very first thing that I saw was a red thing. It was behind me in the reflection. I think it touched me. It was a creature of some sort. I don't remember it clearly, but I do remember it being in that room with the mirror. We couldn't see it in the room, but we could see it in the mirror. What you just said reminded me of the idea of a reverse vampire. Vampires can't be seen in a mirror, supposedly. Well, this could be seen in the mirror, but it couldn't be seen in the room. But it was definitely there. Do you guys remember what I'm talking about? It's hard to remember.
I was trying not to. Thanks, Hawk.
Well, it's important. It might be something that has to do with this whole thing.
that's the case, I'm going home. I do not want to come across that again. And I'm, you see me, I'm kind of visibly shuddering at the memory of it. Well, let's not think about that right now. Let's head back to...
Where is Amelia in all this? We need to get a hold of Amelia.
Yeah, speaking of...
She started this whole thing.
Yeah.
She'll probably be at the university tomorrow.
Well, we need to do some consulting at the university. These things are supernatural, and they have some of the best metaphysics teachers in the world at the Miskatonic.
Kind of strange that you saw... First thing you saw in a mirror was at the university. And then the next time it happened was here.
And that mirror was melted.
Well, here in Radley's house.
But...
It's this woman, this... What was her name again? Amelia Court?
Amelia Court.
That's what it's called. Well, it would seem that she's your linking factor between the two mirrors.
Outside the game for a moment, what happened to the Crimson Letters? What happened to the manuscript? Did we ever recover it, or did we just recover the fake?
The manuscript was lost, if you remember correctly.
The manuscript was lost.
The fake was recovered.
So from my perspective... The real one is still out there somewhere.
Yes, never, so the three of you...
We never recovered the actual manuscript.
Yes, to the three of you, the real one is still gone.
That's not
No true. One knows where it is. And it's not good, because you now know, especially Dr. Thompson, who's probably been looking at the Crimson Letters book, the fake, it's almost a perfect replica. So we know that this thing is like a ticking time bomb. It's going to go off eventually.
Right. At least that the copy of it is not cursed. Even if the original is, as soon as we start seeing a trail of bodies, then we'll have the trail of the Crimson Letters once again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. My brains are all filled up tonight. I've seen a horrible play. I've tricked a crazy, drunken producer into blowing his frickin' brains out, or figuratively. Hopefully we don't hear that in the next morning. I'm drunk. I just got to get back. I don't want to sleep in that house. I think I'm going to go back to my apartment. I'll drive back out to the house tomorrow morning. Gentlemen, adieu.
All right.
I'm going to leave.
Hawk then leaves.
I'm going to go back to the house, though.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to that house, to the mansion.
Okay. What about you, Tommy and Felix?
We are welcome there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go back to the house, too.
Yeah, well... My cases are back there, then that is where I will go.
Okay. So
darn tootin'.
We're gonna say that the Hawks left, but the rest of you guys are walking down the street to your guys' cars. Trent.
Yes.
Your car's windshield is broken.
Hmm.
It's completely shattered. There's no windshield. The glass is all over the passenger and the driver's side door.
Which door? Or the windshield?
Not the door. The windshield. They're on the passenger and driver's seats. Sorry. There's glass everywhere.
What the hell? Can I see anything that was used to break it? Or
yeah, when you open the driver door and you look inside and you look in the back seat, you see a brick.
A brick.
Yep, a red brick, and you can see twine is wrapped around it.
Oh, okay, we'll pick it up, and I assume there's probably a note on there.
Oh, yeah, there's a note, and it's facing directly up. And it says, they're here, stay away.
Is it very neat handwriting? I have calligraphy of 30.
No. It's not.
Damn, I was hoping to use that someday. So scrawled, like, kind of.
Yeah, like big, the big capital letters. It looks like someone gripped it like this and just stay away. They're here.
Can I take the paper off? Is there anything on the back, or is it?
No, there's nothing on the back. It looks like someone ripped off a piece of maybe a parchment or something like that and wrote it on that. But you can see that it's kind of muddy and grimy paper. And it's been written in charcoal.
Charcoal. That's interesting. Look around. Is there any alleyway where there are bricks, things like that, that would meet?
Oh yeah, yeah. You can see that there's like an alleyway where you can see that there are laden bricks just kind of all over the place.
Okay. Well, guys, I guess our ride's a little bit of a mess. I'm assuming the car still will start.
Well, other than that, the car is fine. It's just that someone was clearly trying to get your attention.
Well, they did. Well, clear off the seats, I guess. Whoever's riding. What else should we do? In the alleyway where you see the bricks, there's nobody in there. There's nothing. Like a sheet of paper with a piece torn off, anything like that?
Nope. And with that, I'm going to say that you guys drive back up to the mansion. Because there's nothing wrong.
What did they mean by there? Yeah. Who's here?
They are here. Was it proper T-H-E-Y apostrophe R-E?
Yeah, like they are here.
Okay, so it wasn't like horribly written, like someone. Okay.
No.
Okay.
I think people back in the 20s knew how to write. It's a modern.
Well, that's what I'm checking to see if it was somebody partially, you know, just scrambling to write something, or whether it was somebody who took care to write it properly.
Yeah, someone took care to write it. They understood what they wrote. They just it's poorly scrawled. It's like heavy-handed writing. All right. So night passes at the mansion. There's no issue at the mansion. Hawk, you're at the apartment / office.
Office, yeah.
Yeah, and you're sleeping.
Okay.
And the dream is going normally, which is a surprise, until the nightmare, you can feel like this dread kind of wash over you as a nightmare begins. And in this nightmare, you're standing in a mansion's courtyard, and all around you are trees and vines, and everything is either gray or red, like blood red. Ahead of you is this dilapidated mansion. It's falling apart, and you can hear a mixture of laughing, like cackling laughter and screams. And you can hear footsteps behind you, like these shambling footsteps.
Okay.
You turn around to look...
Yeah.
You see the silhouetted figures, these deformed figures, like leaning up against trees as they move closer towards you from the tree line. And that's when you feel these bulbous vines on the ground wrap around you and begin like wrapping all over your body. And as you're screaming in terror, but these vines are going all over you and they're going in your ear and in your nose and down your throat. And that's when you wake up.
Oh, I couldn't move. Thank God.
Nope.
Am I like all tangled up in the bedclothes?
you're drenched in sweat. The blankets have been pushed off the mattress, and I'm assuming you immediately reach for your bourbon and just...
Yeah, 6 a.m. I need a drink.
Yeah. But that's it. That's all.
All right.
That's all.
So...
Right. So you guys group back together in the parlor that morning. I'll say it's about 8 o'clock.
Okay. By 8 o'clock, I'm there.
Yeah.
I'm driven there.
You guys are now all together. What are you guys going to do today? What does the group want to do? The house has pretty much been searched over.
Why don't we take a look at this? This wooded area behind the house.
Okay, that's an idea.
See if there's anything in the woods. Well,
I have.
Find anything out about the history of the house?
No. Nothing. But here's what I'm going to.
Did you try to look at maybe old newspaper articles to see if there's any sort of event that might have happened in the past?
Yeah, nothing. But what I was thinking is we should follow Hawk's.
Well, we're going to the Mesquitonic today.
Well, I was thinking about going to the library and seeing if there is a secret passage in there.
Oh, well, feel free to do that. My main thing today is I'm going to go talk to Miss Amelia Court and see if I can find a metaphysics teacher that can offer us at least some direction as to what the hell might be going on here. Somebody who knows something about the legends of New England and especially this area. But for now, I'm with Thompson. I'm going to go into the woods with him.
But that's what I'm going to do.
Okay. So how many are staying in the house and how many are going out to the woods?
I'll come out to the woods.
Woods.
Okay.
You know, I don't spend enough time in the countryside. You know, a bit of fresh air. I doubt we'll find anything there. But I tell you, if we do go to the, if you are going to the university later, I wouldn't mind tagging along there. I thought maybe I could go and look in the library. There might be some history attached to this house. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you do. You can go about investigating something like this, but I just think that maybe might be some history, maybe someone who lived here.
Well, I'll tell you this. If you go there and you can find absolutely nothing, that tells us something, too, that somebody has very carefully erased the history of this house. Every house has some history to it.
I'm sure someone said something about the history of the house.
Sixteen something.
We were all too drunk. I can't remember.
Anyways.
Yeah, I mean, if a house has been here that long, it must have, like, someone must have written something about it. Something must have happened here. Isn't that how these things happen? Like, no, that's ghosts, isn't it?
You know, it seems to me too that if the auction house auctioned off this house, they should have to have some history of the house as well.
They would.
Some disclosure of the house.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lead to follow up as well.
If the auction house sold off the house, and there are boxes of books from the auction house, do you think he just bidded on them along with the house?
Except that it doesn't make sense. Why would the books from the house be at the auction and not in the house?
Well, no. I mean, you don't necessarily buy the house with its contents. The whole lot gets broken down. And books except do furnish a room.
Except that he did buy the house with the furnishings. Why would you take the books out of the library?
I remember when I came here that one room he had all the bits and pieces in one room, and the room on the other side of the hall was virtually empty. I mean,
It just seems odd. It does seem odd, though, that if they're going to sell the house lock, stock, and barrel, then you just sell it that way rather than...
Yeah.
Then take everything out of the house and all the way over to Salem and then sell it so that you can bring it back into the house.
Well, I think we were disposing of the house and the estate separately.
Radley's probably in the next room. We could just ask him.
That's true.
Radley is here, yeah.
Daniel.
Sounds like a better idea.
And he kind of walks out. He's wearing a suit. He's gonna go out today. He's got work. And he says, "Yes, Mr. Hawk."
Tommy has a question for you.
Yes,
we were wondering why. First of all, when you bought the house, did you know any of the history? What was your motivation for buying this particular house?
It was a mansion in North Arkham. That seemed there's rarely any kind of house this old for sale in North Arkham. I like the architecture of it.
Okay. You're not aware of any stories behind any history that that house may have?
I remember them saying that there may have been a murder, but that was with a house this old, 290 years. I mean, it's an old house, But no, I didn't find anything particularly odd about the house when I was purchasing it.
And then what about the books? Why did you buy the furniture and the books? Like, was it an estate sale? Did you just buy the whole lot?
From what I know, some of these items were, the majority of the house was divvied up amongst family. What was remaining here was not claimed by them. The books were, and when I learned that there was no books in the library, I just thought I may as well buy books to fill the library.
Why wouldn't you buy books that you wanted rather than just books in boxes?
I don't really read a whole lot.
So decoration.
Yeah.
Okay, I can understand that.
What's more appalling than an empty library? It seems a little drab and a little boring. At least there's books. And he kind of chuckles.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
The piano was in the ballroom was there originally, and most of the things in the parlor were here originally. The wood up in the wood room, some of the bedrooms, but a lot of it I actually bought at that estate sale at the auction house.
And that was the furniture that was here originally?
Yes, the furniture that you're sitting on now is original furniture, but lots of the furniture here is like in the bedrooms or in the dining room. That's all new.
Okay. And some of this was your furniture before you moved here?
I haven't sent for my things in large furniture from New York. I've only brought some small things. Some books that I actually do read. They're over here in the drawing room. And he points to that big stack of crates that I mentioned earlier. And he says, I just haven't gotten to unpacking.
Sorry to interrupt, but what about the bed in Baldwin's room? Where did you get that from?
I got the majority of the bedrooms all at the auction house.
I see.
Thompson, did you get a chance to go through the books?
Say that again?
Did you get a chance to look through the books, or you just noticed them?
Oh, yeah, I just, did a brief browsing through the books.
Yeah, okay.
Nothing caught my attention.
I bought from three people, I believe. I don't remember. I don't know their names, actually. That's all on their private record at the auction house.
Were you given a copy?
No, unfortunately, the auction house said that they'd keep the original owners of the furniture and everything to themselves. I'm sure that you could go and ask them, though, or I could phone them and let them know you're coming.
I think we may do that. It'll take about an hour to drive to Salem from here.
Yeah, it's about a 2-hour drive. Yeah.
Was there any like disclosure of previous things in the house? The previous owners, any kind of property problems that had occurred, or
like I said, there was mention of one murder maybe 200 years ago, but
no pack of documents that came with the house.
Right? No. There was no lengthy document of information. I was given the blueprints. I was given the deed.
You have the blueprints.
Oh yeah, yes, I have the blueprints.
Oh,
may we see the blueprints?
And he nods and he chuckles and says, I am an architect. They're on my study desk with my wax paper and my drawing easel. Let me be back. And
well, we can look at those later if that's fine. That's fine. Yeah, there's no need to do that instantaneously. You say they're there.
He then says, well, is it important to the case?
Not necessarily, but we actually. Poor Mr. Fowler there went out to the public records and couldn't find them. So, funny that they were here all the time.
Yes, I haven't shipped anything. Like I said, I've only lived here for about 2 months, so I haven't had time to settle everything with the municipality.
Of course.
Any other details you know about this murder?
No, the auction house will have all the information. They haven't sent it over to me yet. I have to call them.
Well, if you would call them and tell them that we're coming to pick it up and bring it back to you.
When should they expect you?
Well, gentlemen, I've got plans. I was going into town to the library to miss. Does somebody want to go pick those up? It's about a 2-hour drive there, a 2-hour drive back.
Okay.
Tommy.
You know what? I'll go with you, Tommy.
Tommy and Dr. Thompson.
That way, you know, later on we can investigate the wooded area behind the house a bit later. And I think we should do it as a group. That way we can look out for one another.
Okay.
Make sure that nothing happens.
Thanks, sir.
Well, it shouldn't take us more than a few minutes to look around the woods out in the back if you want to.
Well, it depends on how far out you're going. Are you going just a mile in or 2 miles in?
Well, I imagine once you get to a certain point, you're on somebody else's property.
Yeah, it's about... Ray Lee then says, there's a house about 4 miles that way. And he points west.
Okay. Do you know where the property line is? Is it like halfway? Was there a barbed wire fence? Or?
There's a property line about 3 miles in. He owns about a mile or 3 mile radius around. Okay. But I haven't really spoken to him much. He's got a farmer and he's got a family there. They sometimes hunt in the woods. I think. I don't know.
Well, maybe we'll wait until later. Okay. Or unless somebody wants to do that while we're doing this other stuff.
Let's wait till it's dark.
All right.
Much safer.
So, as you guys are talking, I'm just going to say that that Dexter and Trent have gone through the house as you guys are talking. Nothing in the house, other than that mirror in the ballroom.
Nothing.
Nothing in the house. No secret passageways. No hidden walls. No.
This is based on the blueprints.
Yep, this is based on the blueprints. Right. This is based on, you guys going and searching. There's nothing out of the ordinary other than that mirror in the ballroom.
And when we're in the ballroom, the mirror is just the mirror. There's nothing bizarre happening there.
When you approach the door, dread washes over you. So you know that there's something wrong with it.
Okay.
Okay, I haven't seen this mirror before, so.
You should go take a look.
I don't know if I should.
It's very psychedelic.
From
the Trent, make sure that you stand at least 4 inches away from where the door slams shut in your face.
Okay, why don't you come in with me then?
I'm good. I've already seen it. It's
It's like a 3D painting. You gotta look at it alone.
Really get the and you see a ship after a while.
Cross your eyes a little bit.
You're gonna see the spaceship. Trust me. Closes door, locks it. Do you see the spaceship yet?
Keep looking.
All right. So who all is traveling to Salem? Who all is going to the university? And what is everyone doing? Let's start with
university.
Dexter.
Salem.
Okay. Trent and Tommy and Dr. Anderson. Dr. Thompson is going to Salem. What about you, Felix?
I'm going to the library with Mr. Hawk.
Okay. And then Mr. Dexter, Mr. Fowler?
I'll go to Salem.
All right. So since the majority of the group is going to Salem, let's start with them.
Okay.
So you guys are driving. It's going to take you about an hour and a half, 2 hours just to drive to Salem. Who is driving?
We wouldn't be taking my car, so I guess there's no windshield.
Not me. Last time I drove a group of people, I ended up off the side of a bridge. So
okay.
In the water.
So, I just have base in the automobile.
I can drive, but I don't want to drive my windowless car.
So I guess we're going to go with Tommy's driving.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
Woohoo!
I'm going to drive.
Sure, Tommy. Don't drive us off the side of a bridge.
You guys are driving through the wooded areas of Arkham towards Salem. I need you to give me a spot hidden.
All of us?
No, just Tommy. You guys are just kind of talking and kind of like, oh, wonder what the case is about. Talking to yourself.
Who brought the wineskin? Who brought the chicken wings?
Yeah. Pass?
Yep, with a heart.
Okay. When you look in the rearview mirror past, I'll say, Trent and Thompson, and you see that there's a black car, and it's been following you pretty much the entire way out of Arkham.
Here we go. Gentlemen, don't look behind you, but we might be being followed. Are we kind of in like wooded territory? Are we in a highway?
Yeah, you're like in a wooded area. You're about the halfway mark.
Okay. All of New England is wooded.
You're always in the woods.
Can you tell from your rearview mirror how many people are in their car?
That's a good question.
Say that one more time. You guys, let's cut out for just a brief second.
Looking in the mirror, can we see how many people are in the car?
Because you pass a spot hidden, you see that there's only one person.
Okay. And the car, it doesn't look, is it a police car? Like a black police car?
Nope.
Okay.
It's at this point that, Tommy, you hear the rev of an engine, and you see that the car is slowly getting closer.
I'm going to maintain my speed, but ask everybody else, what should I do? What should I do? Should I stop?
Slam on your brakes. Is it your car?
Yeah. Slam on the brakes. Oh, I didn't see you there.
Is anybody armed?
Yes,
Well, I would say I'm not carrying my shotgun in the seat with me, probably in the trunk.
I'm armed.
I have a belt knife.
All right, I'm going to start slowing down and, like, going over towards the shoulder of the road to, like, give him a chance to pass.
Okay. So you slow down, you pull off to the side, and the car, you know, it kind of comes alongside you, and Tommy and Trent, that's when you see that their passenger window is down and that there's a shotgun being brought right alongside the driver's side door.
Okay.
I need Tommy to make a drive.
Oh, boy.
should have slammed on your brakes.
Oh my god, deja vu. This happened in a dream. Me saying that happened in a dream too. This has happened before.
No, I failed.
You failed?
Yeah.
Oh. We're dead. Right. We're in the water again.
What the fuck happens if you fail? That's what happens. You swerve off to the side just as the gunshot, bang, blows your tire. Your driver's side tire, and it blows up. The car speeds past you. You guys slow pretty much to a stop. It stops, turns around, and then drives, whoop, right back up towards Arkham. It doesn't stop to go again and do another drive-by. It just shoots out the tire, and it passes away. As it's passing away, I need Trent to give me a spot hidden.
All righty. That is a pass. It's like, yep, passed by 3 points.
So the driver window is also down. And you can see as they drive past, they speed past, that the driver is wearing some kind of garment to pretty much cover their face and their body and their hands. But you can see blue eyes. Big blue eyes, and they're staring at you as it drives by.
Hmm. At me in particular?
Yep. Can you give me an intelligence roll?
Yes, sir. Again, pass. Quite a pass, too. By more than half.
But it's almost like a PTS flashback, but you remember those blue eyes. It's the creature as it lay dying on the ground when you shot its brains out.
Oh, right. I can't remember its name, but yeah. Hmm. It's mom.
So you guys are now stopped.
It's the ghoul thing. Go ahead, Jeff.
It's the ghoul thing, that thing in the basement.
Yeah.
Or in the upper floor, though, when we were thinking of going in the basement there.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll tell everybody. Well, the ones who know what I'm talking
yep.
about.
So it's... Yep.
What the hell?
So somebody, you guys aren't completely stopped. You guys aren't completely stopped, by the way. You have a spare, but it's just going to take time.
Yeah.
Yep.
What is it they don't want us to know? Why are they... Trent and Mr. Tomso, having gone through a lot of some of these stranger things last time, how did you guys solve anything? Did you guys battle these creatures and win? Did you battle them and lose? Do you have anything?
Well, I'm still alive, so I guess you can call that a win.
That's a win.
Yeah.
We broke into a building and there was these creatures came out of the basement area. In the dark, we didn't know what was happening, and one of the creatures was killed. Human type creatures described dog like faces, I guess. And the other one, I believe it to be the mother of the one that died, but ran out to the storefront and burst out into the darkness of the night.
And that's what you think you just saw.
Yes. Well, the eyes are what? They're the same eyes as the one on the floor that was killed.
I'm going to kind of throw my hands up because I don't understand what's happening. And I'm just going to put my mind to fixing the tire.
I'll help you with the tire.
All right, so let's now go over to Hawk and Felix.
So, I don't understand. You're seeing the cards on the back of your hand, and you... You'll have to show me, because I don't.
And then you just, all you do is you flick it.
And then it's freaking ingenious.
It's called a Tenkai palm. Yeah. It's all in the flick of the wrist, like that.
That's freaking ingenious.
But if you really want to know more about it, there's a book called it's by Erdnes, the expert at the card table.
Really?
That's the book.
I'm just sort of curious.
Proper, you know, book, because it's written for card sharks, but it's a proper, yeah, that's the one.
I mean, we all know it's an illusion, but my God, it looks so real.
So where are you guys? Are you guys sitting outside of Eli Hall, or are you at the library?
We're just walking up into Eli Hall.
All right.
And I'm going up to Amelia's room.
Okay. So you enter into Amelia's office, which was once both Roach's and Professor Leader's office, and you push open the door, and you can kind of see her. It looks like she's grading something. Okay. And she looks up, and she looks kind of stunned that you're here, and she stands up, and you can see that she's a little nervous and flustered, and she kind of pushes that off to the side. Okay. And she says, "Mr. Hawk and Ms. Mr. Cork. Epstein."
So you're familiar with Mr. Epstein?
Well, he was in the cell with Mr. Radley, with Daniel.
Oh, I wasn't aware that you knew who he was. Well, you should know by now that Mr. Radley is out, and we've pretty much cleared him of any kind of charges. But we are faced with quite a mystery as to what happened to Mr. Baldwin.
Well, I knew that as soon as Daniel told me what had happened, I knew that I should call you.
Maybe it's a good idea if you sit down for a moment before I go on. There are aspects of this case that would indicate that once again, we are dealing with something supernatural, something that has to do, and I pointed that mirror on the wall, something that has to do with mirrors, something that might have to do with Mr. Red, if you know what I mean.
The thing, yes. And she kind of visibly shudders. And she says, "Why do you think it has anything to do with that?"
Well, because Mr. Baldwin, the only thing, first of all, his room was completely demolished. And we found a single finger made out of stone. We thought at first it was a statue, but it has very clear fingerprints. And there are places in the wood of the bed that would indicate extremely large four-fingered claw marks. And there is absolutely... Mr. Epstein here he's a magician, the great Bamboni. He has gone over that room with a fine-tooth comb and says there is absolutely no way, no trick, no illusion, no secret passage, no way that Mr. Baldwin could get out of that room by conventional means. I'm once again thinking mirrors. I'm thinking that thing. And I've seen the landscape again.
And she nods and she says, "As soon as Daniel said that Radley disappeared from a locked room, I immediately thought of something." And she kind of looks at Felix and then looks back at Hawk and she says, "Odd. What's going on?"
There's too many little things here that all seem to add together in some way, including if we add into it the crimson letters, the stories of Keziah Mason, moving, you know, escaping from places by the angles in the walls. Is there a metaphysics teacher here that you know of, an expert, that would at least be able to give us some idea of what legends might be connected to all of this very strange stuff? The woods behind the house, there are no birds, which I personally think is impossible for New England this time of year. No birds, not a single one.
No birds.
In those woods.
And she kind of scoffs and leans on the table because, as you know, she's sort of tomboy-ish, but she's also grown comfortable with you. So she kind of puts her hand through her hair and messes it up and says, unfortunately, the self-proclaimed master of metaphysical teachings, he's also a professor of archaeology and anthropology, Professor Philip Baxter. He just left for Brown University in Providence. I'm sure that there's someone here that can help you, though. And she pulls out her planner and she begins like going through all the names.
What about that fellow Armitage?
She kind of looks at him and is like, "Come on, like we're not going to get Armitage. I don't think we're going to get Armitage."
Well, I know he's not a professor, but you know, he seems oddly knowledgeable.
There's a possibility, and she, because she's also been doing her line of research after the Crimson Letter, she says, it's a possibility that you could speak with the Arcane Society. They're based here in Arkham. They may know something.
You, aren't they just like a bunch of rich people hunting ghosts and things like that? I didn't know there was any legitimate aspect of the Arcane Society.
According to Professor Baxter, he says he knows someone who actually is a part of this organization.
Hmm. Well, he says maybe.
He says that they are possibly legit. He hasn't 100% verified anything, but he says that there may be some people within that understand what's going on.
Hmm. Well, you would know better than I would.
And she shrugs.
You know, I don't blame you for getting us involved in this. It's very interesting. By the way, there's this wonderful play that you should go see in town. I'm joking.
And she smiles because she knows the joke.
We are quite honestly at our wits' end. We have a bunch of clues, but we don't know if they even tie in together. We tend to see patterns in things that aren't really there. Anyways, if I would deeply appreciate it if you could at least find someone here who might be able, maybe you are, you know, is there a direction you can give us for research, something that we could look into? We need to know the history of that house, and we are hoping that maybe there was somebody, some texts in the university library. Do you guys have a clipping service here?
We would. Now, understand that we're a little short-staffed. The depression and all.
Oh.
You'd have to pretty much go through all those filings yourself.
Jeez.
I could find someone. There was that professor of history. He was the one that that talked to you about the first language, if I remember correctly. The writings that were inside the Crimson Letters.
Yeah. The hell was his name? Is he a Russian fellow? I can't remember.
I can't remember his name either, but I can certainly look him up and send him to you.
All right. Have you by chance heard any word on our missing documents?
She
I can't believe
kind
they're
of,
still gone. They're still out there somewhere.
She looks at you and says, "The farther away they are from here, the better. But I have no idea where they are. In fact, we've officially closed the Hobhouse papers and the collection. It's being sent back to the Cobbs."
I see. Well, with any luck, they were burned or something happened to them. Then we're done with them and we don't ever have to hear from them again. But
hopefully. She stands up and she writes down a reference number and she says, "You could probably start your search here." And she hands you the paper for a reference number at the library.
Okay. Thank you, Miss. Thank you, Amelia.
She smiles and says, "Thank you, Mr. Hawk," and she gives you a nice hearty handshake.
Bamboni, do you have any questions or?
I'll just sort of say this under my breath.
I've explained to him everything that happened.
Here, I'll just say, Thomas, to the GM for a moment. Is the mirror still in this room?
Oh yeah, it's melded to the wall. They can't get it off.
Okay, so I'll just under my breath, as an aside to Hawk, I'll just say, is that mirror?
That's it right over there, and I won't even look in that direction. You can see that it's been somehow the glass and the metal have been fused to the wall. It's almost when I told you about the stone finger, that somebody going through the door, having the door close on their finger and cutting off, somehow I think that this is what's happened here, and somehow the wall itself has gotten partially trapped and the whole thing has been fused.
And it's not a particularly old mirror, is it?
Well, this mirror? She points to it.
It's probably part of the university's original. Is that what it looks like? It's not a modern mirror.
You can tell it's rather modern. It may have been something that a leader put in the room to spruce it up.
Oh really? Okay, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
Forget what I just said and pretend that I said something else. But I keep my eyes averted from that mirror. If we need anything, we'll come back.
She nods.
Say hi to the dean for me.
She laughs and says, "Fuck him."
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so, I say, Felix, if you are finished looking at the mirror, we can go down to the library.
Yes, yes, of course. Yes, yes.
It's quite an impressive library. Have you ever seen it before?
No, I haven't. No, this is my first time in Arkham.
There is reportedly an entire section of it that is completely forbidden. It contains some of the most ancient and mysterious magical tomes of that have been collected. They're extremely rare. Some of them one of a kind. We won't be able to see those.
And with that, they go down to the library, which now takes us back to Salem. So you guys have arrived at the auction house. The auction house is called, where are you? Regis Harrison and Moore. Yep. You got it. You got it, Tommy. You remember. So when you guys arrive, you can see it's very busy. You enter and it's almost like a madhouse. You've got auctioneers trying to sell. You've got brokers. You've got patrons trying to buy. It's chaotic. But you manage to stop an auctioneer and ask them, what do you ask them exactly? She looks at you and says, can I help you?
We're here to pick up the files that pertain to the recent auction sale for the house in Arkham.
You're from Mr. Radley, correct?
Correct, yeah. I believe he called ahead.
She nods and she says, one moment, I'll have to get the papers. She runs, and you guys kind of wait for about 5 minutes, and she comes in with this big stack of papers, and she says, this was everything bought by Mr. Radley about 2 or 3 months ago. It was back, let's see, and she goes through and she says, it was back in early May, and she kind of hands it to you, Tommy.
And is there anyone here that would know anything more about the house or the auction itself?
She says, everything about the auction, the house, and all the furniture or furnishings or items that he bought, and she smacks the folder. They're in here.
Okay. Including the previous owner?
Because these are all... Yep, everything should be in there.
Okay.
She nods, and then she waves and says, if there's anything else, and she kind of wanders off to help another patron. So, can you, Tommy... because I'm going to guess you open them.
Yes.
Can you do a library roll?
Sure. Much better at library than I am at trap. Yeah, pass. Regular pass.
Okay. So one of the very first things you notice, you're not so good at accounting, but the very first page is an accounting sheet. It's essentially like from like an action planner saying like this is what was bought, how much it was, and if it was sold. There are only three names of items who Rayleigh bought from. The names are James Healy, Ingram Sheffer, and Ban Wicker.
B-A-N?
B-A-N-W-I- C-K-E-R.
I'll turn to the other gentleman. Do these names mean anything to you guys?
Can everyone give me an intelligence roll? Oh, everyone who has an intelligence above 70.
Above or equal to?
Above. Or equal to, sorry. Yeah, if you have above or equal to, you're fine.
I failed anyway.
Oh, I failed too.
My intelligence is way below.
I failed that. 83 out of 70.
Okay. I'll give it to you guys anyways.
We just had a traumatic experience. We're a little...
We're frazzled.
Ban Wicker's not a name.
Oh.
And I think in the chat box, our Mr. Hawk from 200 miles away.
A voice from beyond.
There's a voice from beyond. Would you like to...
The people listening can't tell what the hell we're talking about.
Yeah, well, they can't see it either. So how about... How about Tommy puts it together for those listening?
I'm not sure I fully understand it. I know, so he brought up the fact that we dealt with a gentleman named Abner Wick. So there's a definite correlation between Wick and Wicker. But Fat Man Association. Shop Uncanny Trifles.
It's the shop you guys broke into.
Yes. We're the
I'll let you guys think about it. Tom, you think about what you did. You sit over there and think about what you did. As Tom sits over there with this evil little smirk. He's laughing like an asshole.
Oops.
Is it possibly an instruction that they're saying to ban Abner Wick from bidding? Or maybe just a simple typo?
No, it doesn't look
like that. I don't know.
You can see Banwicker. But a lot of the items have been... all they are item numbers.
And you said these are the names that he bought from?
From, yeah. So essentially what happens is that people wanting to sell these items, they essentially sell them to the auction house. The auction house then sells it to Radley.
Okay.
So the auction house bought it, then gave an item reference number, and then they sold it to Radley.
Okay. So maybe he got the items through Abner's shop.
Yeah, who knows?
Well, we'll say that you guys shall we say, other than that, there's you have all the papers. We'll say that you guys get back in the car and you're heading back up to Arkham and you guys are reading through the papers. Nothing strange about the house or anything like that.
Is like the murder mentioned?
The murder is mentioned. It was a dispute between a neighbor. And the house's owner killed the neighbor in a duel. So,
oh, how fun.
Old fashioned.
So not so much a murder as it was a legal duel. But it was on the house's property. So we're now going to make a leap of faith here and say that the group knew that Felix and Hawk would be at the library, at Miskatonic Library. So the four of you kind of group up with them there. Hawk and Felix have been poring through books, trying to find something, if not anything, and you guys are swamped. There's nothing. Okay, so it's you guys are like literally like you're face planted in these books when the four of them walk into the library looking for you guys.
It says here that the people of Hartlepool in England,
mm-hmm.
right, during the Napoleonic War, it says that they found an escaped monkey, and they actually captured it, tried it, and executed it as a Napoleonic spy. It's got nothing to do with what we're working on.
Oh,
it's
just shit. A funny story. You keep doing that. I thought I had this elaborate thing that suddenly came into my head with this monkey, and you're talking about the fucking Napoleonic War.
Yeah, well, I'm a magician. I'm not some egghead. I don't, you know, I know the magic section of the library, and you know,
I can't find out anything about this neighbor. That something about a duel, but I have there's just bits and pieces of information so far. Oh, they're back. Yep. I wave everybody. I probably is Hawk. I don't wave like this.
Shall I tell them about
Tom the waves like this? I don't know what. Hawk waves like, yeah, Hawk waves like this. Okay. Ah, gentlemen, we have turned up very little information here. Did you guys come up with anything?
Well, we show Hawk the all the information.
All right, Hawk, detective skills, go.
We might want to mention getting our tire shot out as well.
Yep. We may want to mention that.
Okay, so wait. You're saying that you think you saw our female ghoul friend.
Ghoul friend.
I didn't even think that. It's kind of cool. We got a girlfriend. She shot out your tire. Okay, and then you think this has something to do with Abner Wick?
That seems to be.
Well, this name here that you've got written down, it's obviously an anagram of Abner Wick. Right, you can see here.
Yep. And it's very clear that it's literally if you switch around the
Ban,
A to B.
Ban Wicker.
And then Abner Wick.
I didn't get that.
Now see, I would just call that a typo.
He's like, now I think that we've all decided, at least those of us who are in the know, that Abner Wick is a very shady character.
Whatever happened to him? Is he still around?
He's got his shop in town, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. You know he's got a shop in town.
He's so slimy. He can do the slimiest thing, and when you try to pin it on him, it just slides right off. He's never been implicated in anything. But we know that he's involved.
Tommy, I'm going to say that in talking about the antique shop and everything like that has kind of, you're out on the town quite a bit. Main Street, a lot of the shops have been closed since the collapse of the economy.
Hmm. Abner deals in rare items, and that's probably kept him afloat. This is going to sound ludicrous, but we have sort of believed that there is kind of an underground group. Traditionally, I guess New Englanders would refer to them as ghouls. We don't know anything about them, but we have a strong, because of Trent there, we have a strong belief that Wick and the ghouls, if they in fact exist as a society, that they're tied together in some way. He deals in rare and weird artifacts. He was in fact trying to get a hold of the Crimson Letters and failed, at least as far as we think he failed. We still haven't recovered them. I don't know. Now he's here. I had no idea that he was going to be involved in this. But it's all just bits and pieces that start to fit together. We just don't have all the pieces yet. I'm wondering if we should try and check around. See, we've been focused right here. If we were to try to check around, what if we found out that Baldwin was in fact alive and well in New Hampshire? And that this was all some sort of staged elaborate ruse.
Well, it still brings us back to our initial question, which is, how did he do it?
You know,
I mean, I make things disappear for a living. And for the life of me, if I was going to make someone disappear from that room, I'd be doing it in a very different way. I'd be misdirecting. But I mean, the misdirection doesn't work because the only way out is the way we came in. He couldn't have got past us as we came in.
You know, I'm very strongly inclined to believe the way you are. The magic is the last thing I want to even consider. And the only thing I can think of is that he was not in the room. and or, that you were tricked into thinking that he was.
Or, I mean, you're saying with even with your theory of the magic, you're saying that something took him away, and the thumb was all that was left of him after he was taken. What if he wasn't taken away? What if he was just eradicated?
You mean sort of disintegrated, blown? Perhaps the dust in the room is what's left of him? Perhaps. Except for the finger? I hadn't considered that, but it's a good theory. Maybe he's still in the room, just all over it.
Huh.
Pulverized.
Gross. Yeah, I mean, everything in the room was wrecked.
Well, it is kind of gross, but I've heard the theory that the last breath that Julius Caesar breathed out as he died from his stab wounds, every time we breathe in a little bit of that last breath. It's spread through the whole world by now. It's a little gross. Something.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
With your previous experiences with the mirrors, has anything previously come in or out of a mirror? Or are they just visions, hallucinations?
I don't know. How do we know that this isn't all a dream?
No, I mean like physically. Like, did you see a creature standing in a room? Or did you only see a creature in the mirror?
Actually, that's a good question. Did we, when we were outside looking up, we could see the creature in the room, couldn't we?
You could see it.
Yes. There was a moment when it was not manifested in the real world, and then there was a moment when it was manifested in the real world.
Okay. So then based on previous experience, we know that these mirrors are a gateway or portal.
That's at least what we're beginning to believe. I believe that we were going to go check the woods, were we not? Do we still have time? And I mean in the day.
Yeah, I mean, the sun will begin to set when you guys are in the woods, but you have time. It will still be daylight.
Well, I haven't been able to find anything. Or actually, that the question is have I been able to find anything, Thomas?
Nothing.
Okay.
I mean, you're finding books on ideas like oh my god. Let me look. I have it written down in case this actually did happen. You guys actually go to the library.
You wouldn't call the monkey story nothing.
So you're finding things by like Zollner, okay? You're finding things by Henry Slade. You know, just people who believe that the fourth dimension can be seen in the mirrors, and, you know, and that humans just don't understand the fourth dimension, and maybe we could break through, and that Henry Slade was like a human that could go through walls and stuff like that because he could go through the fourth dimension. Just kooky stuff like that.
Right. I think that Felix and I have discussed that, and it's much more likely that if he ever demonstrated this power for someone, it would have been a magic trick of some sort that he was using to bilk things and sell his book.
Oh yeah, so, Houdini. Exactly. Houdini did something very similar.
Yeah. So I think that we should all go back to the house. I'm not sure that we've gotten anywhere. But we can explore the woods. What do you think?
Sounds like a good idea to me. There is something. I don't know. I can't put my finger on it. You're right. There's something.
There are a lot of supernatural things in New England that are associated with the woods. Mm-hmm. And the scary thing is that the woods are everywhere.
Can I just throw out one other idea?
Yes.
If somebody shoots at you, what do you normally do?
Call the police.
That's what I'm wondering. Do we know where this ghoul? You guys are talking about this ghoul thing as if you already know where it lives or where it resides.
Like I say, the problem is Wick. We have... He has had the police called on him before, and he manages to slime his way out of it. As I say, I believe his record shows that there is no violation that he's ever been caught at. But he is a slimy bastard.
So does that mean we shouldn't even report it, or we...
How would we explain it? Like, that we... Who would we say we saw?
Yeah, ghoul? A girl ghoul? Goyle? It's a tough nut that we're stuck in. You know, who was driving? I mean, about, who among you was?
Tommy.
Tommy was driving. Did it see you, Tommy?
I'm sure.
Oh, shit. I'm sure. I was thinking that of all of the people here. Wait. Fowler.
Yeah.
Wick doesn't know you. I couldn't walk into Wick's shop, nor could Trent.
No.
But Fowler and...
Tommy.
Not Tommy, because the thing is seeing Tommy. But maybe...
But it's seen me, too, right?
Well,
you were in the back seat.
Yeah, there's no guarantee.
But if we need to explore that area...
The only person Felix too can do it too.
Uh-huh.
Felix, yes. Felix was with me.
But I'm willing to go into Wick's shop.
Well, if he's someone who sells strange antiquities, then I mean. A magician's got every reason to go into a place like that. Even exactly. I'm just looking for stuff to,
yeah,
exactly.
Buy well, some, me... you know, do a bit of background, a bit of set dressing for a prop or something.
Me and Felix can both go win. We can kind of be.
If we can find a reason to involve him, because I even hate to have you involved in that slimy bastard, but. The only other thing that I'd like to bring up is there's a possibility we might involve somebody from the Arcane Society. Now,
that sounds
really. but Amelia Court seems to think that there is at least some legitimacy there, and they might be of help.
Okay. No.
All right. Thomas?
Well, it is 11, 10, or 9, or 8, wherever you live.
Yeah.
Or 4 o'clock in the morning.
All right. So we'll call it there?
Mm-hmm.
That was a pretty good episode.
Yes.
I'm kind of freaked out.
Yeah.
You didn't think Abner Wick was coming back?
No, I didn't see that coming. And back. You know what? To be perfectly honest, even with the listeners, we had said earlier something about something that made me realize that nobody could remember Wick. So I posted it there actually before you guys had found the paper. And so I just like hit the click just before you found the paper. And then it was just, I was surprised that it was exactly what you guys were looking at. So anyways.
Yeah. You posted that and I was like, and literally I said, you know, Ben Wicker, and you went like that. You made a face and I was like, oh God. And I saw your face and I saw the text and I was like, oh, so we figured it out.
Yeah, it's kind of the other way around. I figured it out before I figured it out. In any case, let's go ahead and finish it. Our players included Corey Heisted, Sean Little, Mick Swan, Jeff Wilkins, Wayne Worthy, and myself with Thomas McKean as the Keeper of the Secrets, please consider visiting our Patreon account. Just a few dollars a month will help us greatly. We're currently producing 4 shows a week with music and sound effects added in post-production in order to create a richer listener experience. Our musical intro, entitled Insidious, was provided royalty-free from Purple Planet Music. We're also providing audio-only versions of our show free for you to download from Podbean or iTunes. Feel free to send us comments on the show. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed our broadcast, please give us a thumbs up and subscribe to our channel for updates on our latest shows. You'll find links to everything I mentioned in the description below. This is Tom Rayleigh, inviting you to journey with us once again into the darkness for another adventure into the universe of H.P. Lovecraft and the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. Until next time, good luck and good gaming.